All right, so I've turned the recorder on, so we started officially at 9:30. So I'll open up real quick with some prayer, and we'll get into lesson two on discipline. So dear Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for the time that we could spend together in your word. We ask, Lord, that we would use this time wisely, that we would take what you teach us in the word and apply it to our lives and our families. In Jesus' name. All right, so lesson two, discipline. Last week, we finished up lesson one and got into the introduction. If you weren't here last week, review the introduction. The key word there is, discipline isn't only punishment. Discipline's rebuking and correcting and educating and upbringing and punishment. And notice the similarity of discipline and disciple. But what we're going to start this week, we're week four with the life example, Don and Mary. So Don and Mary are parents of children ages 3, 6, 9, and 11, and have noticed that their 9-year-old Hunter was acting up a little more than usual, picking on his younger brother and sister. They tried to put a brake on his nasty behavior, but with limited success. Then one day the phone rang. The school secretary had informed them that Hunter had been fighting, and the principal wanted to meet Hunter and his parents in the office that same evening. When Hunter came home, Mary asked what happened. Hunter explained that his classmate Tommy had been picking on him for weeks, calling him names and pushing and shoving him around. "I got tired of it, Mom. I beat him up today in the playground during noon recess. He better learn his lesson," Hunter finished. All right, reflections of faith. As Mary reacts to Hunter's explanation, what mistakes could she easily make in regarding to the explanation itself? Any thoughts there? First, who's parents of boys? We all have boys?
Mine's not a fighter.
I better get on my husband now.
Actually, when I was preparing, I was thinking over who's been coming to the class. I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to get everyone prepped and ready for later years.
Hi, come on in.
Somebody sitting here?
No.
Okay.
And we're in lesson two there. You got the whole stack in front of you.
Okay.
And I just ask that everyone does a name card up so we can all know each other's first name.
Okay. So I only think you guys have one, right?
Oh, there's a family over there. But anyway, and we're on page two of the lesson two.
Okay.
All right, so as Mary reacts to Hunter's explanation, what mistakes could easily be made in regarding the explanation itself? What's that?
Blame him for getting in trouble.
Blame him. Blame Hunter?
Yes.
Okay.
Or completely blame the other boys.
Mm-hmm.
And not give Hunter
any blame. Yeah.
He started it.
Mm-hmm. So that's exactly right, but what's the underlying piece there that no one's mentioned? You can blame Hunter, you can blame the other boy, but what's really missing there?
Well, she's not really understanding where he's coming from.
Well, the fact that he was picking on his younger siblings, so it's like he's getting back from this other child what he's doing to his own siblings.
True. I guess what I'm thinking of is, do we really know the whole story yet?
Well, no.
You know, we've only heard Hunter's side of the story and the fact that he was fighting at school from the school, but there's no, you haven't heard of, what's the other boy's name, Tommy? You haven't heard Tommy's side of the story. You haven't heard the principal's side of the story. You know, so there's some pieces of the puzzle that are still missing at this point, which could lead us to take Hunter's side or both blame Hunter, you know, either way. So. All right, as she considers where the blame belongs for the problem, what are some errors that could be made? Kind of talked about this already, but yeah, blame Tommy.
Or if she takes all the blame. Like, I didn't stop him when he was picking on the little ones.
I should have known something was wrong.
It's my fault.
Yeah.
Not hold him accountable.
One that comes to my mind, and Pastor Wattershot says it quite a bit, but parents are often, not my little Hunter. My little Hunter would never do that. And come on.
Guess what?
So, okay. What should Don and Mary try to accomplish in their meeting with the principal?
Say, get all the facts.
That's a good start, yes.
Find out if this is the first incident or if he's been acting up in class. You know, there's been other things too.
Mm-hmm. No, I think not only with their own kid, but the other one too. Just trying to develop a history in your mind so they can get a better scenario of how often is the other one in trouble versus how often is mine in trouble, so that you can kind of assess the present situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it comes just historical.
Yeah. One thing that the story doesn't give us, we don't have the background of what kind of school. You know, I think, you know, it could be a St. Mark's kind of school. It's Christian education. It could be a public school. You know, we don't really know.
I think they should also try and get an action plan. Like, tangible items. Too often, you just discuss the problem but don't help. Like, what are the steps we're going to take? Mm-hmm. You know, Hunter's steps, Tommy's steps, principles.
All right. What, you know, in this meeting with the principal, what is something that could happen that you should probably try to avoid?
Getting kind of confrontational.
Yeah.
So probably, you know, stay calm and have, you know, find out everything before you jump to conclusions or start pointing fingers.
And I think, let's say it, but I mean, I think Hunter's in the meeting with the parents and the principal. So especially then, you don't want to sit there and fight with the principal right in front of your own kid. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't teach him how to respect authority too well if you're, you know, cutting the legs out of the principal right out in front of them. So, yeah, that's a very good one. Thank you.
But you also don't want to be defensive and you know, you want to come with
on question two on page two. So. I'm sorry.
Like, you don't want to be defensive coming in and, you know, just, you know, feel like you're attacked or anything either, because that's not the center. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Not going to listen otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We just did two.
We did three. Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, yeah, we just covered all three there too. Another thing that I had written down there, and you know, obviously, if Hunter's in the meeting, you want to be very aware that he's there, he's listening. You don't want to argue with the principal, but yet you don't want to have Hunter walk out of that meeting totally embarrassed or dejected. That, you know, if maybe get Hunter go to the bathroom or send him out of the room, and if it's going to get meaty, you know. But you don't want to. Just depends on the setting of the meeting there. Okay. Question four. Assuming that Hunter's explanation is true. So that this boy was picking on him, and he finally, you know, blew up and beat him up. But assuming that explanation is true, what are some of the things that Hunter needs to learn?
Some alternatives to fighting.
Such as?
Taking five, walking away.
Talking to somebody, he should have said something sooner so that there was people aware that there was a problem.
Right.
It's really, you don't know that he didn't, though.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He might have been like, I did this.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Especially if the other kids are bullying and it's been ongoing bullying problem.
Yeah, where's the supervision?
They do it when you can be supervising as well as you can. It happens no matter what. I mean, you really work hard, but...
Yeah.
They know how to do it when there's, the teacher is dealing with something else or whatever.
Right.
You try really hard, but...
Yeah, I guess one punch could be beating up. You know, I think the kid's unconscious right
now. This is a story, was it like that one?
Yeah,
exactly.
I had a child one year walk by another child. He was walking by him with a hymnal or a dictionary, and just like that, he got on the top of the kid's head, and I'm like, it's right in front of me. There's nothing I can do to stop it. I had no clue he was going to do it. It was out of the blue. So.
Yeah.
When Greg was working through this, he read this one, and he's like, oh, this could be an interesting discussion. And I had a friend in Maryland who had a situation like this happening with her son. And after reading this Bible study, I'm like, I don't know if she handled it right, but yet I kind of think she did. Her son, they had friends transferring from Japan, and so they were staying with them, and their friend's son kept hitting her son, and he had used words, he had told his mom, and so finally she goes, that's it? She said, Andrew, if he does that again, I am giving you permission just once to use the karate you've learned and kick it. And she went to the older boy, and she said, I want you to know, you've continued to hit him. We've asked you to stop. It hasn't. I've given him permission. The next time he hits you, you hit him for him to kick you. And so she told him, picked on him again. Andrew kicked him, and it was done. And I was like, Like, she made everybody aware of the situation.
That's great.
It wasn't like she said, go beat him up behind your back. But yet I was like, the boy wasn't learning. But yet, is that okay? And she even struggled with it. She's like, but it solved it.
Mm-hmm. But haven't we gotten as a society into the whole, we just can never touch, we can never use physical stuff. And I mean, that's the whole thing, like with war too. You try the diplomacy, you try the stuff, and then you just gotta say, enough is enough. And I think boys especially, I've been reading a book that Sue had about raising boys.
It's a good book.
Boys just, they keep doing the same things over and over. Garrison, when he stood up on a chair, the girls, you'd swat him once on the butt and they would stop. And Garrison, just every opportunity he can find, he's up and around. He's going and he's yelling at me, walk.
Doesn't faze him.
Doesn't faze him. So it's just, I think, if this had been a girl thing, I think you'd be talking about a little bit of different stuff.
There'd be far more emotion.
But
even in the Sunday school, here, I cited a couple times in a pre-K Sunday school, because sometimes there's like 20 kids in there, and there's like two adults. So I've cited before, and some of the kids, you tell them, okay, stop talking, stop touching, stop hitting, and they keep doing it. So I'll pick up a little guy and go, okay, come over here. So and the other teacher's looking at me like, wow, you touched him. Wow, you can do that? Can you touch him? It's like, yeah, you can touch him. I didn't beat him when I touched him. It's like, wow, you know you could do that.
So as it's going on, in the thing here, it talks about, he's picking on his brothers and sisters, and you get the impression, it says for weeks, but we don't know if it was 1 week or 3 weeks. What the one thing that comes to my mind on Hunter is, why is the first time hearing it as a parent when you've beaten someone up, 2-3 weeks after this kid's been picking on you? And I would hope as a parent, they would, my children would come to me and say, Dad, I got a problem at school.
Especially the older they get, they don't.
Yeah, little Joey's doing this or little Joey's doing that. What you know, what can I do, or what do you recommend, Dad, or what do you recommend, Mom?
They're like us, you know, we got a problem, and we try. I got a problem with fuel filter. I should take it to someone else and let them change it, but like an idiot, I keep trying to do it myself. I got gas alarm this morning. They're like us, so they try to fix their own problems. They don't want to bring it to Dad's attention because, you know, I don't want to bug Dad about it. But, you know, and then it escalates maybe because they're probably just like us. You know?
And again, I'm sorry, coming back to the boy thing, this is just typical male behavior.
wait, that's not
it. It's the way the male brain is wired.
To not ask for help.
To not ask for help, to try and solve it, because it's a manly thing to solve your problem, to get along with another man, or, you know, in this case, a boy. He was trying to work it out in his way, and enough got enough, and he had to stand up for himself. And now he probably, you know, needs to work on, you know, like what you were saying before, is to things to do, you know, to go talk to your teacher, to go keep pushing it, to make sure you're talking to your parents before it gets to physical stuff. But that's not
true, though, because I ask Phoebe all the time. I'll ask Phoebe, what happened in school today, or how did things go in school today? Oh, nothing. That's all I get is, oh, nothing. So, and I know there's something going on because I hear from the teachers and I hear from them. There's something going on, but she doesn't tell me. So I'm maybe just as a kid, they want to do their own thing, be their own independent person, and solve their own problems.
Some of the time, too, I think it's outside of mind. I mean, I'm a child therapist, so I deal with kids' problems all day, every day, and, you know, they come in and I'll say, how'd school go this week? Oh, it was great. I mean, they're not putting me on. They truly think it was great. And then Mom comes in and says, he was suspended and this happened. Oh, yeah. You know, they just kind of don't even think about it because they're not there. So, you know, maybe part of that's going on, too. It's just like, okay, the kid's bugging me at school, but at home I'm fine.
You know? Well, he's acting up more at home, too.
Right. It comes out as behavior at home, but he may not be making that connection.
One thing, I'll go back to the introduction and talk about what discipline is. And you know, one thing we try to do at home is when our kids fight, and it's like, you know, one of them will come and, you know, so-and-so hit me, or, you know, and it's like, okay, and we try to dig down to what happened, and it's like, okay, before you hit and they took away the toy, did you say something? No, Dad, I didn't say anything. You know, it's like, okay. And so we're trying to teach them and train them. Look, you can't just resort to, you know, throwing a punch. Yeah. You got to use words. Yeah. You got to say, hey, that was my toy. I was playing with it. Please give it back.
Yeah. One of my favorite tricks came from you, though, that you said you used a lot in fourth grade, is when you're teaching kids how to talk it out, is go, what did you do? And I tried that, and they're like, but gee! No, what did you do? And that one's helped a lot.
It is. It's funny, though, because, like, you can just see it. Like, the older one's bossing the younger one around, and he just finally can't take it anymore, and oops. Like, oh, I wasn't supposed to do that.
Well, it just doesn't seem like there's enough details to exactly what happened, because, you know, like, looking at question six, if the principal's punishing them exactly the same, I don't agree with that. If, you know, the school could have some culpability in the whole thing.
We don't know the details. We don't know what type of school. So, yeah, there's a lot of unknown degree. Yeah.
Well, I think the other issue that they can't ignore is what's happening at home, that he's taking it out on his siblings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just bringing up the, well, now you know how you felt when this was happening. You know, now think, look at what you're doing there. And I think that just needs to be addressed, because it seems like it's been an issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on to question five, then. What can Don and Mary do to help Hunter learn these things? Question five, page two.
Thank you.
Okay.
And even just, and when you're, you know, when you have problems, and, you know, to say, oh, you know, I'm really frustrated about this. This is how, you know, like thinking out loud so your kids hear what you're doing too as you're modeling.
I was also just thinking that to help him learn it, you know, like, he's not going to get to be on the basketball team for a week.
which to me that it's the same thing as if a kid's acting up in class and you don't give them recess, they got to get their energy out. I mean, maybe get him in a karate or something where you learn how to control those emotions and focus it instead of just striking out at what, you know, somebody who's picking on you, some sort of discipline sports-wise.
We're jumping ahead to the basketball one. That's going to be an interesting one. How about in our house? What can the parents do to help Hunter learn?
I think you know, he's the oldest. He needs to see the responsibility, or not the oldest. Next oldest, but as an older sibling to model for his siblings proper behavior, since he's, you know, 3 and 6 years older than the 2 younger ones, you know, and that with the privileges of being older, there comes more responsibilities, and one of them is to model that behavior, and because you know better, you have more expected of you.
Yeah, modeling proper conflict and resolution or solution, be it the parents, maybe it's the dad and the neighbor, or dad and his brother, or whatever. I mean, we all have conflicts as adults too. How do we, you know, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree, so, you know, how do we model conflict resolution as adults to our kids?
Run away. He's
laughing,
he's virgin
because
he knows I hate
Kappa. Well, sure, you can go hide in the bedroom.
That's how I do it.
It has that working for you.
I don't say that so far. 37 years and I haven't been in a fight.
Wow. She doesn't beat anybody up.
Just wait until you see.
All right. Question 6. Let's assume that the principal believes Hunter's side of the story, but yet he still decides that Hunter will be punished by not allowing him to play on the basketball team for a week, and Tommy is punished in a similar way. What reasons might he have for imposing this discipline on Hunter?
To not show preferential treatment, to just punish them equally.
Okay, and yeah, that's one.
He was still in a fight. I mean, there was still a negative behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But in the principal's eyes, was Hunter the one who threw the first blow, so it gives the appearance that he's the one who started it.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, but he's punishing both the same. It's not like he's saying, if you threw the first punch, you get 2 weeks off, the other guy gets 1 week off. So it doesn't sound like he really cares if he threw the first punch. It was just fighting his fighting here both.
Yeah, right. It's probably a policy. It's probably, this. You get in a fight, this is what the consequences are.
I mean, you may tell Hunter off to the side, you know, job saying that the bully, but we still have a week. You know, hopefully his parents do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And most schools, at least public schools, say if you were in a fight like this, you'd be suspended for 3 days. So this is pretty lenient.
Wow. And I think it's sort of like, too, if the kids are fighting over a toy, it doesn't matter who had it first. Sometimes they just take it away.
Mm-hmm.
They both get the same punishment, even though one had initiated it and one didn't.
Or in the case of 1-year-old twins, you just find an identical second one.
One'll be different.
Yeah, one'll smell a little different.
Yeah.
The one I thought of is, you know, what's the message to the rest of the school?
Right.
You know, and I deal with that all the time at work, where no one, you know, everyone's got their little circle of knowledge, and no one, you know, everyone's circle is a little bit different. So, you know, Stacy saw one thing, Rich saw a different thing, you know, Greg saw a different thing, and, you know, who knows what's the rumor throughout the whole school. And, you know, but pretty much two boys are fighting, two boys got punished. And, you know, hopefully that gives a message to the whole school. Fighting, not appropriate, end of story.
Well, that way one of them can't complain that their punishment is more unfair than the other one.
Okay. Question 7, as a parent, would you impose any additional discipline on Hunter?
They take him out for ice cream. He stood up for himself. I look like he stood up for himself. I take him out for ice cream.
Well, I think I would.
Greg. I guess it's right. He was being picked on and he stood up for himself, right?
Well, it was going on for 2 weeks, though, and he did nothing. And then he pummeled the kid.
And he was picking on his siblings at home.
Yeah.
Oh, Hunter was picking on siblings?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for the picking on the sibling part, there should be consequences. Yeah. I'm torn on the issue of you act up at school, you get punished at home. If you already have a punishment at school, right. I don't think there should be two.
I think discipline is, you know, is different than punishment. I think it definitely needs some discipline in regards to, you know, the stuff we were talking about before with picking on his brothers and sisters, is to help disciple him, you know, in a way that helps them to.
Aren't they essentially the same thing, discipline and punishment?
Punishment is just part of discipline.
Discipline is many things. It's teaching, it's coaching, it's mentoring, it's rebuking, and punishment.
When you counsel kids, do you see some kids who might be having problems at school, like a difference if their parents impose additional ones or not? Or they probably don't have involved parents.
I have to laugh because the kids I work with come from such low-functioning families that the parents don't know what discipline is. They punish, they beat their children or things like that that are way over here. The few, I'm trying to think, I do have a few higher-functioning ones, that the kids, it's all like they're always in trouble. They act up at school, so they're in trouble at home. They act up at home, they're in trouble. I mean, every time they turn around, they're in trouble, and so they say, why even bother? Why try? The few that can make the distinction, I think it helps. You know, the parents are saying, hey, you already got suspended for 3 days. I'm not going to punish you on top of that or discipline you, you know.
One thing I thought of on this one, we don't have enough details. We don't know if it's a Christian school or a public school.
Right.
We have no idea what Tommy's family, you know, obviously if it was two kids at St. Mark's, you know, if Joel and Ben were fighting, I would approach it totally different than if, you know, Ben and, I don't know, yeah, and Roman, some kid down the street were fighting, you know. But the what comes to my mind is this an opportunity to teach the child how to follow Matthew 18 and go in private, hey, you're doing this, it hurts my feelings, blah, 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 and try to, you know, model Matthew 18 if it's two families that are believers, and if it's a family that's not a believer, it might be an opportunity to provide a witness. Have, you know, Hunter go apologize to Tommy and say, I'm sorry, and maybe throw a gospel message. I shouldn't be fighting with you, and please forgive me. Or, you know, something. Try to steer it that way. But it depends. We don't know. From the example given, we don't have enough information. But I would think of that, talking to with Linda, and then see, you know, maybe there's a way to have an interaction between Hunter and Tommy to teach a better lesson.
So just to clarify, the overlying consensus here is if your kids are punished in school, you don't punish them in addition at home.
I would just say hopefully my bar is always lower at home than it is at a public school, and hopefully even
you mean
that my expectations are always higher of my children than somebody else's expectations.
Your bar is higher.
Yeah. You would
lower.
You would expect
lower means it's harder to get under.
You know what? There are most people go over.
I think a lot depends on the school, if it's a public or a Christian school.
And it depends on things are being handled. There might be some things you can do to reinforce whatever the teacher is working on.
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, I don't know if punishment, but maybe discipline as far as it goes. Because I know Joel had, once he got comfortable in school, he got a bit festive, shall we say. So we have to do a little bit of every morning. Now remember, gotta raise your hand, or you know, no hugging your friend, you know, at school, and you know, wait for later. You know, just, you know, kind of doing a little cheer, you know, so you're working with it, but not maybe not necessarily, I don't know.
I think every moment's, almost every moment's a teaching moment. No more punishment, perhaps, but I think you could take this and do a lot of teaching, a lot of instructing with it, which is still discipline.
Right.
Okay.
Just, you don't necessarily have to bring the belt out. You know?
There may still be consequences, too. I mean, if you're working sure. with them and, okay, you're continuing to act up in school every day and you're still climbing on the desks or whatever, you know, happens to be going on, then there is going to be follow through.
I guess with Phoebe, when she was having her problems in school, rather than, I guess it's disciplining because we gave her goals. If she could stay up off the out of trouble for certain more days, she'd get treats at home. So kind of giving her rewards for being good. And it turned out that's all she needed. She needs a bit of positive reinforcement to stop, you know, hitting people and stuff.
And we moved her, pushed back her bedtime an hour, and
She runs before.
And she would run laps in our court before we got in the car.
She really needs to get that energy up. She's got a lot of energy.
Yeah.
I know what she's getting it too.
But that's reinforcing things that'll help at school. So
yeah.
It's working together as a team.
Yeah, that's good instruction and so good plan. All right, does everyone have a Bible? Do we hand some out here? We're going to move on to the next part, Hebrews 12, 5 through 11. Stacy, anyone?
Yes, thanks. I'm going to grab two.
Two? Any others?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think we just get hung up on discipline as being a negative thing. You can have a lot of positive discipline.
It's not just punishment. Mm-hmm. Even taking your kids and, you know, Linda teaching the girls how to cook, that's discipline. Later on in life, you know, discipline of fast food every day or cooking for myself. You know, that's discipline that's going to pay off 15 years from now. So, but yeah, remembering that discipline isn't only punishment. Okay, Hebrews 12, 5 through 11. I'll start, and is everyone comfortable reading? Okay, and we'll just go around this way, read a verse each. And you have forgotten that the word of encouragement that addresses you as sons.
All right.
My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you.
Because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son.
Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father?
If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons.
Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we have respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live?
Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness.
No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it.
Thank you. The Hebrew Christians were facing difficult challenges as their opponents tried to terrorize them into abandoning their faith in Jesus. The future looked even more bleak. It was important that they understand the role of affliction or discipline played in their lives. What relationship does the author draw between sonship and discipline? What's that?
Sons are discipline. Yeah. If you're a son, you're disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like if you don't receive discipline, you're not a son.
Mm-hmm. And what, but what, why though? I guess
because
why?
Because he loves you.
Because he loves you, yeah. So that, you know, love is discipline. And discipline is...
restraint.
Is a lot of things. Teaching, rebuking, correcting, and punishment. And, you know, some of the notes I have in, you know, I got a concordance here, but, you know, on verse 5, the Lord's discipline. Suffering and persecution be seen as corrective and instructive training for our spiritual development as children. You know, and going back to the root word of a disciple, you know, what is a disciple? It's a learner and a student of Christ, right? Mm-hmm. So... yeah. But yeah, love is the connection. Anything else on 8? Alright, question 9. Why does the Lord discipline and punish those he loves?
To teach us?
Make us better. Mm-hmm. Bring us closer to him.
Yeah.
We all need structure, and we all need boundaries, and you know, the mm-hmm. Lord is helping teach us that, and as parents we need to help our children learn that.
Okay.
You know, I think some parents see themselves as being, I need to be my child's best friend, and so they don't discipline, they don't shape their children, and then the kids run amok, and they wonder why they have out of control teenagers.
Yeah.
You know.
What do boundaries do? You mentioned boundaries, Martha. What are boundaries?
Just knowing where we stand in life, I guess. You know, knowing rules and
what's acceptable
expectations,
and
what's
acceptable.
How far can we go before
right.
going too far?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, rules and boundaries makes kids and I think adults too feel safe. Mm-hmm. You know, if we had no laws and no rules in our country, it would be rather scary to live.
Yeah.
You know, if we had, you know, everything running into everything else, it just, it'd be chaos.
Mm-hmm. You can't function without boundaries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know that they like the boundaries.
No.
And that's why we're here.
Well, they know when they push, when you push back, they've got a framework in which to work, mm-hmm. right? If they push and then they keep pushing and pushing enough, and they never reach that boundary, then I don't know. I think they're just unstructured and I just don't think they know what to do. You know, if I can throw an egg at somebody and there's no consequence, what if I throw a blunder at the TV? What if I do this? What if I do that? So,
mm-hmm. Well, I actually have some teens that I work with who their parents are so strung out or unavailable or whatever that they don't have discipline and they don't have the structure. And I've had a couple teens actually say to me, and it blew me out of the water because I wasn't expecting it, I wish my parents had been more strict or told me what to do, because they maybe see their friends, they have to be home by 10 or whatever, and I'll say, well, what's your curfew? They don't care. I could stay out all night. They wouldn't care. They don't care where I am. You know, and so they are getting the awareness of saying, I wish my parents did do this, because mm-hmm. I don't, you know, they're floundering, they're almost adults and they don't have a clue what to do.
But that, you know, from my vantage point listening to that, it almost sounds like they equate that with they don't feel loved.
Yeah, right.
That's
yeah.
They don't care if they don't care.
They don't, nobody cares if I ever talk to them. You know, so it's vital. And I think that's what the Lord is trying to teach us.
Yeah. I think of, discipline is for our good. And I think of, when we're raising young kids, and, you know, think of the analogy of crossing the street or, you know, playing on the front yard. And it's not like, you know, you're trying to control your kid's life. You're trying to prevent them from running out into the street when a car comes whizzing by at 30 miles an hour, which would be devastating. It would not be good for them. And that's what discipline throughout our children's lives, however long we have them with us, that's what discipline is intended for, is for their good. And the Lord's discipline for us is for our good. And, because you certainly don't want your kid running out into the street, getting hit by a car, and you want to apply that kind of across all, know, sometimes you're in a crowded, busy street, and sometimes you're on a little prairie trail in the country. And, you know, the risks are different, but you still want to train to both and instruct to both, or all, you know, as much variables as you can. All right, question 10. What can our attitude towards the Lord's, I'm sorry, what can be our attitude towards the Lord's discipline?
Can be or is?
Should be. We'll see it as a positive instead of a negative, for one thing. Just seeing it as, like you were saying earlier, it's for our good. So instead of, I don't know, instead of seeing it as a consequence, see it as a means of growing closer towards Him. Mm-hmm.
And understanding that you may not get it at the time, just like your kids maybe don't get why you're disciplining them in a certain way. They may not get why does the limit have to be this. We don't get necessarily what God is doing, but we have to just trust Him and go.
True.
I was thinking that, well, hindsight's 20/20. Yeah. It's always once I've gotten through something, yeah, I'm like, oh, now I get it. But in the middle of it, it's like, yeah. It's like you have to almost have that distance from it to see what you learned.
Well, if you pray for faith, and I prayed for faith before, that's kind of a mistake. Yeah. It's what God does to you to make you have that sort of faith. I paid for patience and faith, and I was astounded. I didn't get what I thought I'd get. You know, the old magic wand, and bing, more faith. But no, I got things that push me, and that's what God does. And every time, I work for the city of Vallejo. Vallejo's going bankrupt. Things just keep getting worse and worse. And every time some things go worse, I try to figure out what I'm supposed to learn from this, and I can see how God's taking care of me throughout the whole thing. But it's you know, what am I supposed to learn from this? You know, how can I take something from this positive and try to work from there? You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the city manager just decided to cut everyone's pay by 5%. But because I took a certain test, I can raise my pay by 5%. So God's taking care of me, but it's also kind of pushing me closer to the edge. So, I used to work in the police department, where I had a skill that was not really transferable to anywhere else. It was just Vallejo specific, right? Now I work in water, and working in water, you can take that state license and you go anywhere in water. So, like I said, God's taking care of me. I can see that. And God's given me a vocation I can take wherever I want. I can take it, but still I'm being pushed. Every step I'm being pushed. I'm not doing it because I want to. It's like the children of Israel being pulled out of Israel, right? When they're in Israel. When they're in Israel, they're not producing fruit. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're just sitting around body dog doing their own thing. And God says, no, you will go over here. You will go over there. He took them to other places. It's just what God does to push you, to make you do His will, or to make you learn what He wants you to learn. It's not like God gives you a book and says, here's the book. Read the book and answer the questions to the end. You know, it's more of a trial by stuff.
Well, even though, you know, He has been providing, you know, His job in water is not rosy by any means. There have been a lot of really negative things that it's just like, okay, the Lord's providing for us, and we just have to focus on that because, you know, the way He's provided is a blessing and, I don't know if you call it a curse, but just not so good.
Well, we all have different skills, and discipline doesn't mean you learn something that you don't have a skill for or aptitude for, right? I don't ever see myself being disciplined in music, for example. But I am being disciplined in other areas. That, you know, so. But in the end, you know, I'm thankful for the Lord's discipline.
The Lord won't give you something you can't do.
Yeah.
You know, He'll always give you a way to stand up under it. And the way to stand up under it is to turn to Him. You know, there's no other way get through the really hard things is to turn
him. Yeah, that's one thing. No matter how many problems I've had in work, I come home, I tell Pam I've had this problem, I've had that problem, and she'll always ask me, did you pray about it? Did you talk to God about it? And chances are I forget to. She reminds me, so it's a good thing.
Okay, I think we've kind of covered 11. We'll go over it briefly. In what way might people make light of the Lord's discipline? Sue kind of hinted to it in the very beginning of question 10. Well, how, what should our attitude, or what?
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's very profound.
Sue, I'm listening.
Yeah.
The one thing I just finished an article about a guy who's in his 20s and he was deployed to Iraq, and how if you don't look at it from God's perspective, how he blamed God for all the bad things that happened. And so instead of seeing how can I learn from this, and he ultimately ended up going back to church and then saw it from, oh, look how God protected me through all these horrible things. But in, like, making light of it, you can either, one, not even see the role God's playing in it, or you can blame God for it.
My mom used to do Meals on Wheels, and she always befriended the elderly people that she would take meals to, and there was this one man who was always grumpy, and it was always her goal to make him smile. And it took her a long time. And then after that, you know, even though she stopped doing Meals on Wheels, she'd still go to visit him. He had been a baker, you know, and we as teenagers even went with her a couple of times to talk to him and stuff. And she always would have these conversations with him, and she would witness, and he would talk about being in World War I, and he would leave a foxhole, and it would get blown up. He'd go to another foxhole, he'd leave it, and it'd get blown up. And she's like, don't you see God's hand in this? No. I mean, the whole time she witnessed to him, no indication at all. And everything he'd bring up, my mom would say, don't you see how God was, you know, they were never supposed to have children, they had one child. And his family was ready to jump in and take his baby away if his wife died during childbirth. And he's like, no, you're not going to do that. And that was like, you know, he was like 90 years old back, you know, 15 years ago. So this was like way back in the early 1900s. And if you had, there weren't single fathers. Mostly kids got farmed out, you know, if the mother died. And she got to the end of that road, and, you know, in some ways that was her discipline too, is you just keep persisting, even though, and he died and she never knew if he, you know, believed anything that she witnessed, but she just kept going, so.
I think on question 11, one thing I thought of is, when you complain about discipline, are you learning from it? And, you know, going back to the definition of discipline, it's teaching, instructing, correcting, and at the very end, there's punishment. But if you just complain about the discipline, even if it's, oh, God, I got to do my chores, you know, I got to clean my room up, are you learning the, you know, the lifelong lesson there?
Probably, you know, even if you're not consciously aware, you're probably subconsciously learning something, and you're just having to endure something. You know.
True, but you're right.
Yeah,
you're going to learn something, but how much are you?
Thing, yeah. Too. It's just.
Yeah.
Well, you might increase your disciplining time if you keep complaining, because
you might just give you some extra there because you're just not getting it.
You can either learn it quickly.
Or we could take all week.
I had a friend once who, she was going through something, and, you know, she was just like, I got it, enough already, God. You know, I got it, I got my lessons, now stop.
He's like, ah, baby doll.
All right, question 12. In what ways is the goal of parental discipline similar to that of the Lord's discipline?
I think both want the same end result. Where do I want to go with that? just in terms of the motivation for doing it, I guess is probably one way of thinking about it.
So love.
We as parents do it for the love of our children, not to be spiteful or mean. And same thing with the Lord's discipline.
Well, they sometimes think you're mean.
Yes.
I know, but just like that, we sometimes think, God, like, God, how could you do this?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's the same.
Talking about it, it's so identical that it's really, you know, it makes you look at yourself like, wow, I do the same thing my kids do, and I'm so frustrated with their response to how I'm trying to help them. And God looks at us the same way. I'm doing this to make you a better person and bring you closer to me, and we're so resistant and negative and take all these little things that he's doing to make us better as, you know, oh, you know, and that's like the kids stomping their feet and walking off and I love you and trying to help you, but I do the same thing when God throws a little snag in my day, and you know, it's like you just have to change your whole way of thinking, you know. And for kids, I think it happens, you know, it's kind of like it happens slowly with adults and kids too, like he's saying, you know, the first thing we should do when something doesn't go right is go to God in prayer, and inevitably it's one of the last things I do, because you're trying to plug the hole, and then all of a sudden you realize, I can't do this. And I think the holes get bigger and bigger, and that's when you start realizing, you know, I need to go to prayer first, because it's way too much for me. I thought the plugging was working just fine, and now it's almost like God's lessons get stronger and stronger until you start
it's
going
like,
to
it's like when you read through Kings and Chronicles, how you know, there'd be some mass army about to attack, and the king's all, oh, yeah, what are we going to do? I know, I'm great. They never think of that. They don't think about that until afterwards, that, oh, yeah, I should pray about this. And then God solves the problem, because God wants us to come back to him, like you're saying, with the problem. But we never think of it.
Give them right back.
We always try to solve things like we're serving the kids. They want to solve the problem on their own, or as parents say, because they're male. Got to do it on their own. But as humans, we want to solve the problem on our own. And then later, it's like, well, I solved this problem, or I created this, or I did that. And we didn't. It's what God gave us. And I try to be mindful of that. And you know, God, thank you for you know, giving me the ability to deal with the resources you've given me, right? Because I don't. My kids are God's kids. This is you know, everything God gave me. So.
Yeah.
I read research one time that said that kids, it takes like 2,000 times of saying don't do that for them to make a connection in the brain. And when you think of it, that's why we have to be continually disciplined as God's children, because we just, it takes us so long, you know, to really get it.
Okay, so, you know, we question 12, we love our children, that's why we discipline them. Question 13, in what ways is discipline of a good human father different from the discipline of our Heavenly Father?
The approach.
Make mistakes.
I love that.
Well, and I like how it says, our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good. And I was like, yeah, how many times do I discipline them for my good? Like, I'm not going to raise little rebellious, sassy kids to embarrass me, you know? And God does it for our good.
God's probably thinking the same thing. He doesn't want to raise us rebellious adults.
And just thinking, as they thought best, I mean, how often do we like call and go, what should I do with this situation? You know, and God.
Or you deal with it and you went, ooh, that was wrong.
Yeah. We thought it was best at the moment.
I listen to Dr. Laura on the radio sometimes at work, and sometimes I wonder why these people call in with these questions when they already know the answer. But I guess that's why, because as a parent, you tend to, you know, did I do it right? Why did I go overboard? Did I do this or that? And I guess that's what
they want, validation.
Yeah, they call Dr. Laura.
You need affirmation and validation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Am I doing the right thing here?
I guess as a guy, I just don't need it.
So, but yeah, okay, so exactly, that's one. We're sinful, and we cannot discipline and love perfectly to our children. But what's another thing that the scripture outlines there?
Well, God's intention, his end result of discipline is to have us in heaven with him. You know, and we as human beings, that is probably our primary goal, is to raise our kids so that they will be in heaven. But we also have, you know, to be good citizens, to be contributing
so
to society and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the Lord's kind of disciplines us in that way so we can get along with our fellow Christians here on earth. But the end result is heaven. Mm-hmm. That's his, you know, his goal.
Okay, and that's true. I'm looking for verse 10.
For a little while. Our Father's discipline is for a little while.
Yeah. Where God's discipline is forever. But our discipline as parents, obviously it varies family to family and life length and all that kind of stuff. But our discipline is definitely limited. You know, it may be from birth to 18 years and off they go and you never see them again. Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Or it's when we die as, you know, grandparents or something like that. Maybe you had a 50-year span there, but who knows? But it's definitely limited. We don't know how many years we'll have to train and instruct our kids. All right, question 14. How might children make light of discipline? The first part, and the second part, how might parents?
Like, laugh when you're counting wrong?
Just the, oh good, I wanted to sit in the time out chair. Okay.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that from?
I wanted to go in my room anyway. Yeah.
I love the logic response for that is, well good, that makes it easy on the both of us.
We get the folding arms a lot. No.
Like that's that. New.
I can't stand that.
Yeah. Down the hallway and sweating.
I don't get the very often look that I'm going to my room. I don't want to.
You know, screaming.
What attitude?
I might make light of it. maybe. By trying to figure out how to get them to solve it, like going back to Hunter, trying to get them to stop coming to me. Mm-hmm. And so when it's petty fights, to see they're not going to get a resolution mm-hmm. from me, but I know one time they came up and were whining, and I'm like, oh, well, and Greg goes, no, he hit her, that's not oh well. And I was like, oh, like I didn't even listen to what they were saying because I was like, they're bickering, you know? And he's like, go back to the beer. And so, because you hear it so often, I think sometimes I'm just not even listening to them anymore. And so I don't actually do my job of disciplining.
You've been watching too many Peanuts with the
Yes.
All right. And so all these things we've talked about, our children crossing our arms, pouting, whatever, is it similar or different than how parents may handle discipline?
I think sometimes as a parent I just get tired of disciplining. I just get exhausted. It's like, you're fighting again. Just go away. You know, when maybe you really need to sit down and talk it out with them, like you're saying, you just don't need to listen anymore. And the girls were bickering one day, and I said, fine, well, if you go to your room, at least you're confined. Bicker all you want in your room.
I think for the student and for the teacher, for the child and for the parent, discipline is work. Mm-hmm. It's not play. You know,
it's not pleasant.
Yeah, it takes work to discipline your children as a parent, and it takes a work and a positive attitude from the kid to receive it and learn from it. But it's not easy.
Well, when I first started doing the love and logic thing, it was it's one of the lessons I learned from teaching is not to try and change more than one thing a year when I was teaching. Because I always tried to change all these things and it always fizzled because I just couldn't keep it up. So when I started doing that, I decided just to change one thing at a time, and when that got more comfortable, then I do a new thing. And it was a lot of work. It was a lot of brain, activity to try and remember that I was supposed to be doing it a different way. And
I think that's why it's hard too, is because especially when kids are so little, there's so much physical energy required. And you're not sleeping. And so the emotional energy of discipline, that's hard to muster.
Yeah, and it's like the Chinese water torture just keeps coming back. It's like, Phoebe, I told you to turn off the light. And she doesn't. Phoebe, turn off the light. And she doesn't. Phoebe, turn off the light. Okay. And she doesn't. Phoebe, turn off the light.
All right, I haven't heard the bells yet, but it's 10:30, so I'll close with prayer. We'll end with question 14, and we'll start with 15. And Stacy, before you go, if you could leave your email address, if you're comfortable with that, and what I do is email out the the scripture for the week ahead, and then if anyone's got prayer requests, we share them and kind of go with some of the encouragement and prayer group type philosophy in this class. So, okay, so we'll close with prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for this time together in your word. We thank you that you teach us, that you discipline us, and we ask, Lord, that you would change our hearts, that we'd be receptive and thankful for that discipline. And we also ask, Lord, that as parents, that we would have that same attitude as we discipline our children, and that we would do discipline that is pleasing and proper in your mind and your guidance. And we ask this for this coming week, and pray, Lord, that we can move into the world and be a light to share the gospel message. In Jesus' name. Thank you, everyone.
When you're ready, let me know. It's a huge bag. I'll carry it.
Thank you.
This is what I carry it everywhere.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you, Steve. I'll keep you. And,
oh, sure.
I'll have them next week.
He can read these.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Wow, what service.
I know, huh?
What a good man. Mm-hmm.